If you got the email about the program before, during the course of this week, you may have seen that the Bible reading was actually wrong on it. I got the chapters wrong initially. Chad was very concerned that I might be preaching Steve's sermon from next week instead of this one. But I wouldn't have wanted to have missed this one for the world. The whole narrative here of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and his 12 sons is just a ripping story. The whole thing is a fantastic narrative of God at work through the lives of these people. And the story of Joseph in particular, to me, is an absolute masterclass of storytelling. It's great script writing. And it's no wonder that so many works of art have come from it. There's been a ballet by Richard Strauss, not Johann Strauss, one of the other ones. There's been an oratorio by Handel. There's been at least a dozen TV shows and films, just some of the obvious ones that are listed in a bunch of languages, and I'm sure if you searched around the world in other languages, there would be many, many more. The story's really got everything. You know, it's got the highs and lows. It's got success and failure. It has betrayal. It has ambition and then thwarted ambition. It's got all the great elements of storytelling. And it has these patterns of narrative as well. The highs and lows of Joseph's story are illustrated by three coats that are made mention of during the course of these events. We talked about one of them last week. There's three pairs of dreams that are featured through Joseph's life, and we've seen two pairs today. So there's just all of this stuff going on, and it's a rich field to mine of meaning and significance. And in one sense, the story just speaks for itself. And this part of the story in particular doesn't really have much to say about the rights and the wrongs and the moral implications or this is what you should do as a result of this. It's just telling the story of what happened to Joseph. But there's great meaning that you can get out of it when we look at who is really at work and what is really going on. So I'm going to do things backwards today, and I'm going to give you the punchline of this talk, because we're talking about the people of God. This is our whole theme for the whole year. Who are the people of God? Well, the people of God are those that allow God to work around them, in them, and through them. And we see a wonderful example of this in the life of Joseph, and particularly in this story that we have read today. All right, so we start. The first scene in this story involves the cupbearer and the baker. Now, these were two guys that were quite significant in Pharaoh's court, household, the place where a Pharaoh lives, wherever that is. They were both responsible for the things that Pharaoh put in his mouth. And I don't know whether Egypt had the same kind of intrigue as, other kind of royal houses, where, you might want to do in the leader at any time and take his place. So these guys would have been, very responsible to look after Pharaoh and make sure that what he ate and drank was okay. But for some reason, not explained, they fall out of favour with Pharaoh and he chucks them in jail. So there they are with Joseph. And after a while, they both have dreams. Two guys having dreams on the same night. And like Glenys was referring to earlier, they believed their dreams had meaning. And I think the fact that they came in a pair emphasizes this. And the fact that there's actually similarities between these two dreams also reinforces the fact that they are significant. So, Joseph comes across them and finds them dejected. And they say, "We both had dreams, but there is no one to interpret them." So they knew they meant something, but they wanted to know what it was about. You know, what does this mean? So, Joseph says, "Do not interpretations belong to God?" And he is there ready to tell them what their dreams mean. So they share their dreams with him. We've just read what they are. You know, three branches on a vine. I grabbed the grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup. So the significance of that is three branches are 3 days. This is Pharaoh restoring you, cupbearer, to your previous position. So great, that's fantastic news. The baker is heartened by this and he thinks, oh, this will be great. So he tells his dream. Doesn't work out so well for him. Three baskets on my head, all sorts of food for Pharaoh, the birds come and eat them. Yep, that is also 3 days. And you're going to be lynched up on a pole and the birds are going to, you know, peck at your carcass. Charming story. And it happens exactly as Joseph interprets these dreams. And that's exactly what happens. Now, in this, remember that Joseph is incarcerated here, not only against his will, but against justice. He has done nothing wrong. And the very thing, as we saw last week, the very thing that showed his righteousness was actually used as evidence against him to put him away for a misdemeanor he did not commit. So he's feeling somewhat aggrieved, I'm sure, in this, although the Bible doesn't really talk about what he's feeling. But he does take the opportunity with the cupbearer who's going to be released within 3 days. He says, "Put in a good word for me with Pharaoh, because I don't deserve to be here. I've done nothing wrong to be here." So Joseph may have seen this finally. God is hearing my prayer. He sent someone, and I'm going to be vindicated and or released. But it doesn't work out that way. The cupbearer just forgets all about Joseph. You do kind of wonder, you know, this is a pretty significant thing in the cupbearer's life. You know, that he was in jail and now he's released. And the guy that foretold this for him, that he knew in prison, then suddenly as soon as he's out, he just forgets all about him. Such is how it goes. And so Joseph is stuck there for another couple of years. So the next scene, 2 years later, involves Pharaoh himself. So this time, Pharaoh has a dream. In fact, again, there are two dreams, a pair of dreams, but this time, two dreams had by the same person in the one night. And again, Pharaoh is troubled by these dreams because he knows that they have significance, but he doesn't know what they are. So he calls all of his wise people together, you know, all of the experts that he has around him, because they will know. And he wants to get an interpretation of this dream. But they could not interpret it for him. I mean, these are the people that, this is their job. This is what they do. But they couldn't do it in this case. They didn't know what Pharaoh's dreams meant. So, out of this situation, the cupbearer is there, you know, serving Pharaoh his royal drinks while all this is going on. And suddenly he remembers, oh, my bad, I forgot. There's this guy in prison, this Hebrew, and we had a dream, and he interpreted it, and it happened exactly as this guy said. So, you know, maybe he's the one who will be able to interpret Pharaoh's dreams for him. So Pharaoh gets Joseph out of prison. They scrub him up to make him presentable, you know, fit to be brought before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh says, I believe you can interpret dreams. And Joseph says, I cannot do it, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. So Pharaoh relates his dreams to Joseph. Seven fat cows enjoying life, and then seven scrawny cows come up and eat the seven fat cows, and the scrawny cows are even scrawnier and uglier after that than they were before. A bizarre dream, almost as bizarre as Erica's. And then his second dream, seven heads of wheat, lush and full. And then there's seven heads of wheat that are all withered and scrawny, and somehow the seven scrawny heads of wheat eat the seven fat heads of wheat, and they look even scrawnier and more withered afterwards. Now, there's obviously a pattern here, and again, the fact that it's two dreams with some similarities, you know, would have really reinforced that there is meaning in these dreams. It's not just that, you know, Pharaoh ate something that disagreed with him and had these vivid dreams, which, you know, you then forget when you wake up. No, there was real significance going on here. Pharaoh wanted to know, and Joseph was the one who would be able to tell him. Pharaoh gets the interpretation of his dream. But the next sort of phase of this encounter is that Joseph goes a whole lot further than just interpreting the dream. This is the rest of the chapter. We didn't go on to read this because there's a bit of repetition in there. But Joseph, after giving the interpretation, so the interpretation is 7 good years of plenty and then 7 years of severe drought and hardship. But Joseph then goes on and says, this is what you should do, Pharaoh, about this. I mean, the guy had guts, you've got to say, to even dare to go there with Pharaoh. But he says, and now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. He goes on to say, let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for the food. This food shall be held in reserve for the country to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so that the country may not be ruined by the famine. So he's laying out the plan. He said, not only is this the interpretation, 7 good years, 7 bad years, but this is what you should do about it. This is how you can get through it. God has revealed this to you, Pharaoh, in advance, so that you can do something about it, so that it won't catch you by surprise. The implication here is that God is being merciful to Pharaoh and to Egypt for his own good purposes, not explained at this point. And so Pharaoh thinks about this this idea, and he says, well, the plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials, so Pharaoh asked them, the officials, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the spirit of the gods, or the spirit of God? Bit unclear at this point whether Pharaoh is really recognizing that there is something special about Joseph's God. They believed in many gods, and they believed that, you know, the dreams would have been given by the gods and interpreted by the gods. So how much credit Pharaoh is giving specifically to Joseph's God? Unspecified, unknown. Joseph clearly knows who's in charge here. But Pharaoh accepts Joseph's plan and appoints Joseph as the second in command of all of Egypt. And so Joseph then spends the next 7 years gathering food. This is where the third coat comes in. Pharaoh puts a special garment onto Joseph as a symbol of his authority in Egypt. And so Joseph goes and collects all this food from the abundant harvest that they get for the next 7 years, and he stores it. They start sort of counting everything they get, but eventually there is so much food collected, he stops counting. It's just they are overwhelmed with all of this food that they are able to store. And then come the seven bad years, and the whole area, it's not just Egypt, it's all the countries around Egypt are all hit by this famine. And so everyone is coming to Pharaoh for food. And Pharaoh says, go see Joseph. He's the guy in charge. He'll look after you. That is essentially the story of chapter 40 and chapter 41. Joseph has had all these ups and downs through his life, and this is the culmination of that journey. 14 years in Pharaoh's service, looking after Egypt. Now, the second part of this story, of course, the seven lean years, is where it really develops in relation to Jacob. We'll get back to him in due course. Okay. Who is the hero of this story? Who is the guy making everything happen? You might be tempted to initially think, well, it's all about Joseph. It's about him in prison. It's about him interpreting dreams. It's about him being promoted by Pharaoh and taking charge of the food of Egypt. But in fact, there's nothing said in these whole two chapters about Joseph's competence. There's an implication of his faithfulness, but it's never actually expressed. The only person who is getting the credit for what is going on here is God himself. Last week, when we were looking at Joseph in Potiphar's house, there were these two comments at the beginning. When he first went to Potiphar's house, it says, the Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered. And then when he was chucked in jail, again it says, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favour in the eyes of the prison warden. Nothing particularly said about Joseph's expertise or skill. Now, I think it's implied, but the one who is getting all the credit here is God. He is the one who is blessing Joseph. And Joseph himself gives credit where credit is due. when asked about interpreting dreams, he says to the cupbearer and to the baker, "Do not interpretations belong to God?" And he says to Pharaoh, when Pharaoh says, "I believe you can interpret dreams," he says, "I cannot do it, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." God is the primary actor here, and he is really driving the story. So that's why at the beginning I gave the title. It said Joseph interprets dreams, and in brackets, but God is pulling the strings. God is orchestrating not only the situations, but in fact the rise and fall and rise and fall and rise of Joseph. What is Joseph's special skill in this? Because he does have one, if you look at it. His special skill is that he knows God. He knows God's ways. He can hear from God. He listens to God. That's why he was able to interpret the dreams. So that is Joseph's overarching skill or capability. He knows his God and he is able to speak for God. So God is here taking responsibility for all of Joseph's successes. His ability to rise to places of responsibility in Potiphar's house, in prison, and in Egypt. His ability to interpret dreams. All of this, Joseph is giving God the credit. God is taking the credit for this. So here's a question. Have a think about this. If God takes the credit for the successes of what's going on here, does he take responsibility for the failures? Does God take responsibility for having Joseph thrown in jail for a crime he did not commit? Does God own the fact that the cupbearer forgot Joseph and left him to rot in prison for another couple of years? When God is the one pulling the strings in your life, do we give him thanks for the things that go right? But what do we do when things go wrong? What do we do when it all goes pear-shaped? When things don't work out the way we want, or when, you know, great injustice might happen to us, like we talked about last week? How responsible is God for those things? I think the implication is clear here that you can't just say God is not involved in that. You know, the good things are from God, but the bad things, well, God has nothing to do with that. Yeah, that's not his fault. Well, it's not his fault, but it's not that he's a passive bystander in this. God is orchestrating this whole situation with Joseph. He's bringing about a particular set of circumstances because he's got this bigger plan in mind. And I think he is willing to own all of Joseph's highs and lows in this situation. Where does that leave you with your failures, with your frustrations, with your disappointments, with the injustice that happens to you? Where is God in that picture? I think God is willing to own that situation and be in it with you. The other real recurring theme through this part of the story is the waiting game that is going on. In chapter 40, remember Joseph, when we arrive here in chapter 40, he's been thrown in prison and he's been there for a while because he has risen to prominence in the prison. And he's now the prison warden's second in charge. But then it says sometime later after that, the cupbearer and the baker get thrown in prison. And then after they had been in custody for some time, then they have their dreams. And Joseph interprets and they are released. And after the cupbearer and baker go, two more years go on until finally Pharaoh has his dream. So there's this recurrent, endless almost, waiting. Joseph by this time is 30 years old. So he was 17 when he first started irritating his brothers enough that they sold him into slavery. So 13 years have passed in Potiphar's house and in prison until sort of this breakthrough at the end of the story. That's a fair amount of waiting for Joseph to do as a young man. And I think people in some cultures will have a greater ability to wait, perhaps, than people in the West. I know I'm an impatient person. And think of the irony here. The cupbearer and the baker, they got the answers and the fulfillment of their dreams in 3 days. But Joseph had to carry on for two more years even after that. Joseph would have seen his opportunity to get out when the cupbearer was released. He could have seen that as God's provision for him. Finally, I'm going to get out of this place. I'm going to get vindicated. But when that didn't happen, what would Joseph have felt? That the Lord had let him down again? Here was God's opportunity to act, but God didn't take it. Think, though, what would have happened. Hang on, I'll get to that in a minute. In Isaiah it says, since ancient times no one has heard, no ear has perceived, no eye has seen any God besides you who acts on behalf of those who wait for him. God works on a cosmic time scale that we cannot possibly fathom. He is outside of time. And Joseph would have had no idea of what he was doing in this. God is rolling out a plan that is going to span centuries. And this was one key moment in that plan all these events that were happening to Joseph were all essential elements of this vast plan that God was rolling out. And Joseph would have had no idea about any of that. So it would have been very easy for him to be very bitter and twisted about what God had allowed to happen in his life. There's no suggestion that he was bitter and twisted. He wanted to get out, but in the end, that was all in God's hands. So here's another question for you. What would have happened if the cupbearer had remembered Joseph? Now, I'm not really one for idle speculation, but this is an interesting thought. What if Joseph had had his prayer answered and the cupbearer had remembered him and, you know, put in a good word with Pharaoh and he'd got released? Where would he then be 2 years later when Pharaoh needed him? The fact that he stayed in prison for another 2 years unjustly meant that when Pharaoh's time came, when he had his dreams, he knew exactly where Joseph was and could grab him at a moment's notice, which allowed the rest of this story to take place. Had Joseph been released early, he might have gone back to his brothers, his father. He might have skipped the country and gone somewhere else. Who knows? We have the benefit of hindsight of seeing how all of this unfolds with Joseph. And we say, oh, what a wonderful story about God's intervention, and you know, he's bringing about this wonderful thing, because there's this vast narrative going on about what God is doing to establish the nation of Israel, his people. And this is hundreds of years in the making. But like Joseph, in the middle of his situation, he had no inkling of all of that. And neither do we. When we sit in the middle of our little lives that last a few decades, you know, where are we in God's vast unfolding plan? We don't know. We don't know what's coming even tomorrow, let alone, you know, next year, in 2 years, in 100 years, in 500 years. We don't know how it's going to unfold. And we don't know what role we have in that great plan. But if you learn anything from Joseph, it is that we can be, as God's people, tools in his hands. And he can fulfill his purposes through us, as he did through Joseph. Which brings me back to the punchline. The people of God are those who allow God to work around them, in them, and through them, even when they don't know what the heck God is doing. You may have no idea what God is up to, but just let God be God, and you just be you. And let him do his work in you, through you, around you, and just be a part of it. Be obedient, be faithful, wherever it is that we land. We're going to respond to this in song. Thanks, Jonah.